Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the May 20th, 2014 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. If you have cell phones or other electronic devices, we'd ask that you please silence them. I point out exits, emergency exits, to my right at the back of the room and to my left at the front of the room. If folks are out there that would like to speak later on at privilege of the floor, we ask that you sign a blue card and send it up. We will only be calling on people who have signed cards. Tonight we have two public hearings. The first public hearing I'll call to order, and that is a public hearing on the New York State Office of Homes and Community Renewal Community Development Block Grant Program, 2013 Regional Economic Development Council Consolidated Funding Application, Community Renewal Fund Application. Is there anyone who would like to be heard on that at the public hearing? It's not necessary at the public hearing to have a blue card. Yes.
Christine Carrera with Better Housing for Tompkins County. For those of you who are not familiar with Better Housing, we're a not set on.
We're not getting you very, very loud. Talk right into it if you could. Point it at you. Yeah.
I'm Christine Carrera from Better Housing for Tompkins County. For those of you who aren't familiar with us, we're a private not-for-profit housing agency serving the needs of rural Tompkins County since 1981. We've administered a first-time homebuyers program for the county using CDBG grants for over 13 years. We've also administered a number of CDBG home rehabilitation grants for the county and for the various towns. We are aware that some of the legislators are concerned about the condition of mobile homes in the county. And along with the work that we currently do on mobile homes, we are developing a plan for some mobile home replacement in the future. Unfortunately, that program needs more consideration than we can give it at this time because the funds that are available now, we have a very short window of opportunity to do our application. So we need more time to develop that program. It requires two funding sources. Again, due to the short turnaround time for this application, we're proposing to work with the county to apply for rehab funds to serve low and moderate income rural homeowners doing rehab with a strong focus on energy upgrades. Also, our wait list indicates that people are in great need of new wells, septics, and roofing. These are big ticket items they can't usually afford. Promoting energy upgrades and energy efficiency in homes is one of the priorities of the Southern Tier Regional Economic Development Council, and that's indicated in their Cleaner, Greener Sustainability Plan. So in addition to the energy work, we will be doing other kinds of rehab, again, focusing on the big ticket items. The county and Better Housing's previous work administering similar grants enables us to quickly put together this application, and hopefully it'll be a competitive one. Thank you.
Thank you. Other comments on the at the public hearing? I'd just like to say I was really pleased to hear that you folks are going to begin putting on your radar screen the idea of a some kind of a program for existing mobile homes to upgrade the stock there. I think that's great. Okay, there'd be no other comments. I'm going to close the public hearing on that, and I'm going to open public hearing on local law overriding tax levy limit for 2015. Is there anyone who would like to be heard on the proposed local law?
Good evening.
Supervisor Barber.
It is. I'm Don Barber, a supervisor from the town of Caroline, and I Thank you for the opportunity to speak on this local law. Before making a decision about this type of topic, I believe we need to have a common understanding of how we got to the situation that we're in. And I will suggest that this is a taxation issue, and it's not of our making, it's not of your making, and there's actually nothing directly that you can do to affect the solution. But I believe that in the 1980s, both the federal and state government decided to reduce income tax for all people. But in doing that, they disproportionately reduced the income tax on the wealthy and corporations. This resulted in a tax shift. This is a taxation policy shift that everyday people started carrying a greater percentage of the tax burden. The documented effect of this is a wealth disparity that is now reaching all-time record highs. And just another example would be since 2008, the stock market has doubled in value while everyone else has been able to stay even, they were lucky. So what's resulted in is a two-tier economy with the bottom 90% experiencing economic stress by both persons in a family or many persons in a family working, some working two jobs, and if that's not enough, then you borrow against every asset that you have. Corporate media and the news talk blather would have us believe that the economic stress of higher tax burden is due to freeloaders, not the shift in tax policy or wealth hoarding. In the 1980s, the state government, with reduced income tax, decided that they would do a tax policy shift as well and reduce revenue sharing to local governments. And this is about the time I started being in local government, and I saw this happen and our town have to respond to that. Then they found another way to have a policy shift, and they actually were able to find a way to use property tax as a revenue source for their programs. And I know you've all talked about this many times. It's called mandates. So this is another tax policy shift that's happened that we have not responded to. So make no mistake that the property tax cap was created to highlight pressure on local governments. They need to reduce spending, but I would suggest, as many of you have done in your over the years, that we take this into account every day as we set property taxes for our family, our parents, and our community. What the result of the property tax cap is, and you are watching this play out with the Ithaca City School District, is called evisceration. We take our body parts and throw them away. And if we keep doing this year after year, there will be nothing left but a hollow shell of local governments. The property tax freeze is yet one more attempt at, and this time is to convince our constituents that local governments stand between them and a fat check. So they are pitting our constituents against local governments for a problem that is not of your making, and the source of the problem is never discussed. So I ask you to think about what would happen if this taxation policy, if we continue this for the next 10 years. And I would suggest for your thinking there's little hope that the federal or state government would do anything to change this taxation policy. I ask you to consider the local government as the closest to the people and the only level of government left to advocate for the civil society. And so I watch some of my other local governments make parochial choices, like the town of Ithaca, to cut funding for TCAT, parks and recreations. This is evisceration. And although they've sent it to another level of government, they have not solved their problem, because they will have to do this next year and the year after that. I would suggest that there are two things that you can do in addition to keeping your options open with a property tax cap override. First is to hold every state elected official that represents us accountable for voting for the New York State budget. This was a change. They've essentially agreed with the change that's taken place in tax policy and have done nothing to change the direction. And second, we need to recognize that there's been an economic shift in our county. We used to be receiving income tax as a revenue source coming back to the state and federal government. That's been reduced to just a trickle. So now our economy is out of balance. We need to find ways to retain wealth in our community. I'm not going to spend time now talking about it, but I did just recently have a letter to the Ithaca Times talking about outlining some strategies we could use to change the economic dynamics in our county. I will congratulate this board. The living wage policy you adopted last year with your budget is a step in the right direction, but unfortunately, it's not enough. The alternative, if we think about it, is not pretty. Think about carrying out this evisceration for 10 years. What will our services look like? What will our roads look like? What will our education look like? What will our health and sewer infrastructure look like? I urge the county legislatures to support the property tax cap override. Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to speak on the local law regarding the tax cap override? Or the public hearing on that? Not seeing anyone, I'm going to close the public hearing. Several people came in after we first got started, and I just want to say that if you'd like to speak on privilege of the floor, you need to sign one of the blue cards and hand it up, because we're only going to be calling on folks that have signed the blue cards. At this time, we're going to do one of the things that we really like to do with the Tompkins County Legislature, and that is we're going to give a Distinguished Youth Award. And this month, it's my privilege to do that. And I'm going to call up John Varvianis and his family, and also Kathy Wakeman. Oh, we got to start the meeting, haven't we? Well, you guys can come up. You can wait and be up here with us. You're right. You're right. All right, let's start the meeting. And let's pledge allegiance, and then let's do the Distinguished Youth. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Roll call of members.
Mr. Robinson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa has asked to be excused. Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer? Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
13 members present.
I declare a quorum. Now let's go. I'd like to call on Kathy Wakeman from Dryden, who nominated John Varvianis as our Distinguished Youth. Kathy, you'll know her name from, she's the person who writes the regular column for the Ithaca Journal about things that are happening in Dryden. And she told me on the phone yesterday that she herself is a recipient of a Distinguished Youth Award from Montgomery County. I won't ask her exactly when that was, but I think that's pretty neat. I don't think we've had a Distinguished Youth nominated Distinguished Youth before. So I'm going to ask her if she would please read the letter of nomination.
Thank you, Mike, for the pleasure of participating from this side. In the Varvianis home, serving your neighbors is a way of life. So it's with pleasure that I nominate John Varvianis, son of Mark and Susie, for this month's Tompkins County Distinguished Youth Award. I know John primarily through the Dryden Music Department. He takes his section leadership positions seriously, nurturing and developing the younger students. And I'll mention he's bailed me out of trombone rehearsal more than once as a substitute teacher. He has encouraged younger musicians during their NISMA adjudication festivals, putting them at ease before their big performance. He has served as the treasurer for the wind ensemble and played in the pit orchestra for this past year's musical. John Shirley played a part in Dryden earning the Spirit Award at the annual Music in the Park Adjudication Festival in Dorney Park, Pennsylvania, which our band attends each year. And music is not the only arena in which John shows service to his community. Each Dryden High School student is greeted in the morning by John as he delivers the morning announcements. During Foreign Language Week last year, he delivered the announcements in French, including a poem that he wrote. in French. His language service extends across the ocean. One summer, he taught English to Spanish teens in Madrid and Alcantara, Spain, a 200-hour engagement. John volunteers annually as a referee for the Sertoma Youth Soccer Games. As an official United States Soccer Foundation referee, this is quite a gift to his community. He's involved in the Harris Hill Juniors program, which encompasses flight training, many volunteer hours, giving glider rides to the public, helping gliders take off, cleaning planes in the clubhouse, and assisting with an annual meet, among other responsibilities. He co-founded the Ithaca chapter of the Aviation Explorers and is a member of the East Hill Flying Club, which serves in cleaning planes and the hangar and assisting with fundraisers. John is also an avid athlete. He has enjoyed wrestling since he was four, serving as the captain of the varsity wrestling team for 2.5 years. He played soccer throughout his Dryden career, serving as captain of the JV team. He has also participated in track, ski club, and judo. During his 11th grade year, which his family spent in Switzerland, he was a starter for the undefeated national champion rugby team. While John is an outstanding student, earning high honor roll every semester and awards such as the Bausch & Lomb Honorary Science Award and Math Student of the Month for excellence in pre-calculus, he is also willing to take one for the team. During physics class, he volunteered to lie on a bed of nails and have a full-sized cinder block on his chest smashed by a sledgehammer wielded by a well-practiced physics teacher. There is much more I could say about this fine young man. It's been a pleasure to know him through the Dryden High School Jazz Ensemble and appreciating his service to fellow students. He exemplifies this gift of putting the needs of others first and would represent Tompkins County well as a distinguished youth for the month of May.
John is joined by his parents, Mark and Susie Verviannis. Mark is a former supervisor of the town of Dryden, and also by his brother, Eric. And we're pleased to have all of them here. John, I'd like to give you a plaque to commemorate tonight. And it says, Distinguished Youth Award, 2014 May, an award that emphasizes a truly and inspirational and exceptional individual, John Verviannis, brought to him in part by the following, Bangs Ambulance, Tompkins County Legislature, Specialty Trophy and Awards of Dryden, Purity Ice Cream, and Cayuga Radio Group. John, congratulations.
Thank you.
We also have an assortment of other items that are donated by the sponsors, some Purity Ice Cream gift certificates and a T-shirt and a first aid kit. John, is there anything you'd like to say? Well, we're pleased that you came. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And thanks for doing a great job.
Thank you.
See, I always get excited about things like that from Dryden and then to even miss the opening of the meeting. But we're back on schedule. I'd ask the clerk presentation of the proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
And you may notice in your red folders a letter, copy of a letter from Governor Andrew Cuomo talking about his feeling for the past, about the past legislative session. I'll just leave it at that. We'd like to move to privilege of the floor for the public. It's your opportunity of folks to come in and speak to us for 3 minutes. Privilege of the floor is a privilege. It's not a right. It's a privilege of that we extend at our meeting, and we allow people to speak for 3 minutes. We ask them to sign blue cards, which we have here, and which, among other things, they are green if they speak to the three-minute time limit. They're green not to raise their voice, green not to use lewd, obscene, profane, or libelous language, or to speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. After 3 minutes, they agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. They agree that if they cause a disruption and am asked to leave, they will leave the chambers. Hopefully none of that will happen. Kathy Covert, our clerk, will keep track of time and will give a signal on a sign when there's 1 minute left and when time is up. So we appreciate that. The first blue card I have tonight is from Jamie Hendricks.
My name is Jamie Hendricks, and I'm from Bloomsburg, and I do know Bloomsburg.
Is that not?
This one is
better.
On now. Yeah. My name is Jamie Hendricks. I'm from Trumansburg, and I know you will not be voting on the jail expansion issue, but I still would like to bring something up here so that you have 2 weeks to think about this. This each and every one of you, I've gotten to know some of you personally, and I like you as individuals, and I would love to socialize more with you, but as legislators, I'm kind of puzzled by this, what's going on, and I need to wear a different hat. And so the issue that is really troubling me, and I do not understand, that is that I think there is some sort of lying going on. And I've been thinking seriously about this word. But mendacity, lying, disingenuous, clueless, I mean, there are all variations of the same theme. And what I like you to all think about is this argument that the jail expansion will pay itself off in 5 years. And that is simply not true because of the fact that the expansion will be for low security males above the year of 18. And as we all know, and as Joe Mariano can show with his data, thus there are women that are being boarded out and there are juveniles being boarded out. And there is also this distinction between low and high security. So if we get numbers about who is boarded out on a daily basis for the last 2 years, we can project towards the future and see that probably it will take much longer to pay that off because the boarding out will be continuing. And so what I'm hoping is that there is a more honest discussion about this cost, and that then is maybe a gateway into the two other issues, that supposedly this is done for the well-being of the prisoners. If that is really the issue, why don't you spend that money on building two big conference rooms where they can get more educational programming to prepare them for re-entry? So if you want to spend it, why not spend it on something beautiful as opposed to this monstrosity that is being built now and that is being like sold to the public as something that is improving the quality of life? And that brings me to my last point. I don't think that any one of you believes this is improving the quality of life of prisoners, because now you all would be parents who lock up their children under the stairs and you give them a pillow and you say, now you should be happy, or you like make some window in the wall and you say, now you're in a better position. I think none of you would lock up your children. And so whatever reason you come up with, don't tell us it's to improve quality of life of prisoners, or it is because you want to save the county some money. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next I have Marion. Next I have Marion Susie Kosick.
Good evening. I'm Marion Susie Kosack. I'm a retired guidance counselor in New York State. I'm here to pose a question. Why do we continue doing things that we know are not the best practice? Why do we continue repeating over and over again things that we know do not work and do not make a difference? I am, as a retired guidance counselor, when I was a guidance counselor, I always directed my attention, in addition to my regular duties, to those students who are falling between the cracks, who came from extreme struggling situations. I went and I got them, and I did something with them. And I am here with a 3-page outline for you. I have copies for each of you. you can create something that works, an alternative to incarceration, an alternative to expanding this jail. I'd like to see you take the $900,000 to $1.1 million and invest it in a one-on-one mentor program. Right now, my program is in a middle school, and we ask for the kids with struggle. When we started our program 2 years ago, we were presented with four beautiful little sixth-grade girls, girls of color. Each of their – they didn't know this, and I didn't know it at the time, but over time I learned each of their mothers was in prison. What chance do they have? What chance did their mothers have? I was the guidance counselor for one of those mothers when she was in middle school. I did everything I could. The schools cannot do it. It's not enough. Public assistance cannot do it. It's not enough. Child Protective cannot do it. It's not enough. What will do it is interjecting a responsible adult, a role model, who continues to show up for that one person, a one-on-one program, who stays with that person. So I want you to give this serious thought. I know there's some kind of pressure from the New York State Corrections Commission saying you have to do something or else something, but I know there are waivers that you can have. Somebody said, oh, we've used up waivers. I don't know about all that, but there are ways that you don't have to do that. I'm sure of it. I want you to take a serious look at this. I want you to put some money toward this program. I want every single individual who's at risk of incarceration or maybe already experienced incarceration and is up for their second time or whatever, through drug court, family court, all the courts. I want the courts to sentence or refer or demand that these individuals come to a mentor program. That's what makes the difference. That's how you do it. A one-on-one, same person, trust. Mapping it out for people to navigate the system. As you know, the folks in the jail or on their way to jail don't know how to navigate the system. They don't have a model. It hasn't been there for them generation after generation. Let's stop this. Let's do something different that works. Each of you knows that locking them up doesn't work. Let's put something in place that works. And who do I give this to?
Just hand it in to Mr. Dennis. He'll hand it in to the rest. Thank you. Yeah. Deborah Cipolla-Dennis, please.
Is this one working now? Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So I love Susie's idea. I just want to plug that. I think the mentor program is something that works if it's implemented correctly. In order for that to work, though, it cannot be underfunded. It has to have good coordination. It has to have the community support behind it in order for that to work. So I really think that we should look at that. I also want to talk to you tonight about something that is a device that has been used very successfully across the country. And I have a case study. I only have one copy because I don't print out a lot of stuff. So I'll give this to you, and maybe it can be scanned in and emailed out. This is a case study that was done in Rialto, California, which is a small town, similar, a little bit bigger than Ithaca. But what they did was they implemented a program called Cameras on Cops. And this is a personal camera that attaches either to the uniform or to the eyeglasses of each individual officer. And what they found was complaints against the police department dropped by 88% instantly within the first month. And this does a couple of things. It reminds the police officers that their behavior matters, and so that they're on camera. Someone's watching. So we all act better when we're on camera. I mean, we all are just that way. We're humans, right? So that helps. The other thing that it does is it provides evidence control. So by using the cameras, they found that not only did they have a better rate of conviction by having documented proof of the evidence as the arrest was made. It also has the potential, they don't talk about it much in this case study, but it has the potential to lower or to eliminate false claims against police officers, because if a claim is made by someone that a police officer misbehaved, then they can look at the video, and if the police officer acted appropriately, then that claim has no basis. And so that can be very helpful as well. In the year during this study, what they found in Rialto, California, was that they had an average of about two to three complaints per month against their police officers. In the year that they had the cameras on cops, that dropped to three during the entire year. So it was very effective, and I think it's something that we should look at for our sheriff's department as well as our SWAT teams. Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Joanne Cipolla-Dennis.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight. She was talking, actually, about Chief Ferrara, who's my new favorite hero, and the instances of excessive force actually dropped by 66% in that study of 1 year, so it's quite a dramatic difference. And so I wanted to talk tonight, because I won't be here in June. First, the building that you are thinking of for the exterior building, is that a block construction with the glass block front and the concrete roof? Is that the one that you are talking about in the that is. Thank you very much for that confirmation. So the things that I wanted to consider in the expansion in order of importance to me were the transparency of the process. It's not been observed, in my opinion. I and others have repeatedly asked Mr. Marion, among others, how much the entire expansion is going to cost, including phase three, and how it is to be paid for. Please answer those questions so we actually know what we're talking about. The goal of the public safety task force is to invite the public to submit their ideas for alternatives, yet the public was given at best 3 days' notice of the public meeting, not given any indication of how their information was to be submitted, and not given any indication of how much time we'd have allowed to comment. It was not well published. The meeting was really poorly facilitated, and questions were not answered. There's no follow-up, according to them, of a meeting with the public that we had interest in. The public members that were originally restricted to two, but when some members of the public complained that that was too restrictive, it was increased to four. But clarifications were not answered as to how those people were chosen. So that is of a concern to me. The task force really was given a task to do, and it seems pretty disingenuous if you bond out this project without letting them complete and implement their work. So if you would please address that issue. If you vote for this without seeing if enlarging the capacity is even warranted, in my opinion, that's fiscally irresponsible. I support using that money for things like Susie was saying and for cameras on cops, which will dramatically reduce our arrests. Obviously, you could get there from here. Women and children will not be not subjected to board out, so that is a false perception that this passing will prevent board out. It's just factually not true. And if you take away the only space inside the jail that's dedicated for exercise, I'm a former corrections officer. I do not like that idea. That puts people like me and inmates in danger. And when you force them into a small space, fighting happens more often than not, and then that space is confined for those officers to deal with that fight. And then a lot of people get hurt that wouldn't ordinarily have gotten hurt if there was a proper amount of space to begin with, which is why there is a state regulation. So please think about that before you make that decision. Over the last year, I've been talking to mostly minorities, and we have some problems. Thank you.
Thank you. Ellen Shapiro.
Hi. I'm speaking for myself, but also as someone who's been involved in a project called Building Bridges, which has brought together many different community organizations, including public officials, towards a vision of a community that both eliminates structural racism and poverty and also addresses the immediacy of the climate situation by taking us off of fossil fuels. And the issue of structural racism and poverty is something that most people, when they think about it, realize is a very deep one because it's gotten more serious over time. In some ways, things looked better, but when we get down to it, it's a very entrenched situation, and it'll take a commitment on all of our parts to change something really fundamental in how we function. And I'm concerned that the way this piece of jail expansion is being approached really sends the wrong message to this community. It sends a message that we can't pull ourselves together to actually reduce the amount of harassment of young people of color that has happened so much throughout this country and in this community, that we can't find of the hundreds of examples of alternatives to incarceration, of which we've heard two excellent ones in the last 10 minutes, that we can't find a way to use those funds to actually reduce the number of people who are going into jail or are coming back to jail by getting to more of the root causes of the problem. I don't have the same expertise as the other speakers, but I know that this is the wrong focus and the wrong message. I know that we have so much in this community that can change the basic problem rather than going to the outside of it and continuing what really seems to me to be perpetuating the same structural issues. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, I have Claire Grady.
Hi. I have a piece here by Paula Iwanide. She and I are in the Sean Greenwood Working Group, and she's not in town right now, but I would like to read some of her words that was published in the Ithaca Times. The Ithaca City School District is expecting a $6.1 million reduction in the budget next year, as well as a potential loss of 48 teacher positions. As I consider this devastating news, I tried to understand why our county legislators are still determined to increase Tompkins County taxpayer debt by approximately $1.5 million. I'm including the $435,000 in interest payments that the county will have to pay on the $900,000 expansion in this figure to expand the local jail. While there's less and less money for schools and living wages, we always seem to be able to find the money to build new cages. Extensive research conclusively proves that early education programs, affordable and safe housing, drug, alcohol counseling, and prevention programs, job opportunities with living wages, all work to keep people out of jail. 30 years of research on the war on drugs and on the effects of the largest prison building project in history factually establishes that incarceration and punitive control do little for people's physical, psychological, and spiritual well-being. Indeed, the research shows that incarceration and punishment have only deepened our community diseases, institutionalized racism, and poverty. Having a criminal record has become a legalized way of being ineligible for many jobs, certain housing programs, and educational opportunities. Despite this, our local community is determined to continue investing in modes of punishment and confinement that conclusively fail to build life-sustaining solutions. This leads me to conclude that we are not having a rational conversation in Tompkins County. Otherwise, I can't figure out why we would keep endorsing the use of our taxpayer dollars to establish more of what has been conclusively proved not to work, while the things that do work are routinely cut. As the school budget comes up for voters' approval today, we might take a minute to examine whether our county priorities make sense and for whom. Are we so fearful of people who are deemed criminals that we refuse to believe facts that conclusively show that incarceration does very little to prevent crime, quote, crime? How long will we ignore the connections between poverty, racism, and caging people in order to preserve our perceived notions of safety? Do we continue to legitimate arguments for security through incarceration, even though most incarcerated people eventually return to their communities, often in states of sickness and legalized disenfranchisement more severe than before they went to jail or prison? Do we continue to endorse the physical and sexual violence, coercion, and control that are normal aspects of day-to-day? Actually, this article appeared without the end of it. Oh, thank you. I'm sorry.
Thank you very much. Ellen Grady.
Thank you. It's good to be here with you all tonight. I so appreciate Paula's words tonight, to be reminded as I leave this meeting tonight, I'll go and vote for the school board budget. And my biggest question, I guess, for everybody and for myself and for as we all have to participate in this community is, why do we keep settling for the lesser evil? And why do we keep allowing ourselves to chip away and chip away and chip away at the good things that we know are helpful, as Paula laid out so clearly in that article. And so we're supposed to vote for the school board budget that's going to, potentially lose 48 teachers in this community. And tonight you might be voting on expanding our jail. And what an ironic thing. And why do we, it's not tonight. What is tonight then? I'm sorry. Educate me for a second. It's June. In June, will that be when the budget gets voted? Thank you. So it's soon that you will be voting on that. And so I'm encouraging you to continue to, as people have laid out so clearly here, that the alternatives are what will help us. And as somebody who has spent time in jails and in prisons, you can't make them. What I have seen is that they build them bigger and they just put more people in them. They don't make them a better place for people to be. And it would be good for us to, each one of us to recognize that piece, that is not the reality of what's happened in this nation and in this country as they've built bigger and bigger jails. And I know this is only 7 beds or something of that nature, but it's still 7 beds and it's 7 more people from our community that we get to, imprison or jail. And as we know, who gets stopped in this community, who gets stopped, by the police? And on a regular basis. And we know it's probably not you, and we probably know it's not you. And we know which kids are getting stopped and which ones are populating our jails. So I'm sorry that we keep voting for the lesser of two evils, and that I think that it's possible for us to do something different. And I encourage you, as you contemplate this vote, to do something different. Thank you.
Thank you. Jim, did you want to respond on the schedule?
No. What I would like is for people to please say their name and address as they come to the microphone.
That was our last blue card.
Okay.
But I did want to respond that we expect to be talking about the jail and resolutions on the next meeting, which is June 3rd. Do I see any municipal official for privilege of the floor? I don't think I do. So then we're going to turn to the legislature for their privilege of the floor. I did want to point out before we start that we will be having an executive session at the end of the meeting to talk about contract or real estate negotiations. I see Jim Dennis's hand.
Thank you. It is a complete change from where we have been. May 29th is the Ithaca Festival Parade, and Tompkins County will be taking part in that. Solid Waste is involved, and Marsha Lynch and others have made a promise that we will be involved, we being legislators and other people. And what Marsha would like is for anyone who wants to walk in the parade and maybe carry a sign or do something along those lines, please contact her May 29th. Probably you would have to be down on the end of Cougar mm-hmm. Street, someplace, North End, 4:30, 5 o'clock, 5:30. And you too can walk the mile down here to DeWitt Park if you're interested in all of that. Each year, my wife and I come and stand on the side with the county administrator and others and watch the county go by. There are different departments, and we do have some very creative people in our departments who take part in the parade. And she would like us to do that also, us being all of you and me. So that would be my request.
Peter Stein.
May I go speak into that?
Yes.
Yes. I wanted to say just a few words to the people who are sitting in the audience and
spoke. Peter, you should talk to your colleagues.
What?
You should talk to the colleagues.
What?
You should talk to your colleagues.
No, I'm not talking to your colleagues. I want to talk to these people. This is what I'm going to do.
We ask the public to speak to us, and I don't think we're here to talk to the public. We're here to talk to each other.
Okay.
Peter, just talk.
Peter, talk.
Peter,
talk.
Just go ahead.
All right.
So I just wanted to say something to the people who I've sat and listened to. Unfortunately, we being my colleagues and myself and you, are talking past each other. I would like to make a very short, clear statement. Neither I nor any of my colleagues believes that by doing the jail expansion that we're going to keep more people out of jail. Nobody says that. The jail expansion is done for one and only one reason, to keep more people out of non-Tompkins County jails. The idea is that we have a bigger jail that the people who are now serving time outside of our borders will come and serve the same time inside our borders and save us money. We're spending $900,000 to save us money. That's what we're trying to do. I believe that this county, as much as any, is interested in alternatives to incarceration. I know I'm interested, and many of the people that I know are deeply interested in it. That the fact that we support the jail expansion has nothing to do with that. And your efforts have indeed prompted another look by a group that knows about alternatives to incarceration to see what else we can do. And I'm hoping that they will in fact come out with some conclusion which will enable us to keep more people out of jail. That's all I wanted to say.
Martha Robertson.
I'm glad Peter mentioned the task force that met last night, the ATI Alternatives to Incarceration Task Force that that Brian appointed. And so Brian and Will and Dooley were there. That's the legislators that I saw. And there were a great many thoughtful comments from the public, a lot of, you know, and some back and forth where, for example, Judge Rowley explained some things that most of us don't have experience with, and he does. And it was really terrific that he and other members of the task force were there for at least an hour and a half. I had to leave it a little after 7. So I don't know how long it went. But so I just want to say I think that there were a lot of great ideas presented there, and that we certainly, I hope, we will be looking at them. And I do think we have to look at all options, but that means all options.
Anyone else? Will.
Yeah, I too was there, and appreciate many of the folks that are here tonight and that were there last night. I found it a very worthwhile session. I've also attended most of the meetings of the task force, and quite frankly, been surprised that more members of the public have not come to those. That group is really grappling with first trying to understand the complexity of the problem. What is it that causes people to end up in jail as opposed to an appearance ticket or personal recognizance? And it's not nearly as simple as I would ever have thought. It's a very, very complicated mix of things. And then the next question is, what can we do that will change that dynamic? And I say as straightforwardly as I can, it is my desire, and I think the desire of everybody around this table, we want fewer people in the jail. We want it because we recognize that jails don't do good things for people. They're darned expensive, and we would love for there to be another way. So that is the mission of that task force. If you go to those meetings or go online, the audio recordings are available online through our website. You'll discover the wide array of things that we're already doing. And those are all good things. But we need to be doing more. The question is what? And I appreciate the suggestions that came to us tonight. I apologize. I laughed when we were hearing about cameras on cops, and the statement was made that we all behave better when on camera. The reason I was laughing is that I don't know that that's always true of the legislature, but, you know, it's probably a general statement. One other topic I wanted to mention. A week ago, I was invited to a little workshop about the pilot composting, home composting pickup that our county is offering to residents of West Hill, including my neighborhood. And I have to admit, I initially was not all that wild about going. It was a nice Saturday morning. I needed to mow the lawn. Do I really want to go to that thing? I was just blown away at what a wonderful job our folks did. They had it set up as a series of stations and games. And, you know, I thought I've been composting for years, and I thought I knew pretty much most of what was involved, but I learned things I didn't have a clue about. So job well done. I'm hopeful that it will succeed there and will be expanded to other neighborhoods, because I think it's a really, really good service. But kudos to the solid waste people who did that program. Thank you.
Thank you, Will. Anyone else? Julie Kiefer.
I want to just remark on the impending loss of a community institution, at least I think it's a community institution, and that's Mayor's Smoke Shop, which has been there as long as I've been in Ithaca and does a lot of business still. But apparently it's an unintended consequence of densification of downtown with the addition above that store's level of an upper floor to house the much ballyhooed incubator that is in response to our governor's call for having incubators near campuses and offering all kinds of tax breaks. But the addition of that upper floor which will require an elevator, means that Mayors gets totally disrupted, and apparently the owner has decided it's not worth trying to relocate, and so we're losing something that I think all of us would like to see stay. Densification isn't always good. Incubators aren't always good.
Anyone else before we come back for seconds? Martha's got her hand up for a second time. Less than it being Claiborne.
Are we serving seconds? Yeah. I'm sorry I could make it to the meeting last night, but as we all know, the life of a legislator, you have many, many conflicting meetings, not to mention, as a parent, children who have concerts and all sorts of stuff to attend. I just hope that it was worthwhile to the committee to be able to hear from those in the public who could not be a part of a regular part of the committee. Although I want to emphasize, if people aren't clear, that those meetings are open and anyone can attend as they are engaging in discussion. The other thing, Will, you just triggered for me talking about the food scraps recycling program, that in my ward, the second ward, we are looking to be the next place that we implement that program and see how it works. So I am excited about that and looking forward. And now you've got me even more excited when you start talking about what it looks like when it's presented. So we're looking forward to having that happen in the second ward as well. So I just wanted to share that. I also wanted to very quickly comment on the Ithaca Festival that's coming up relatively soon. As a matter of fact, it'll happen before our all the legislature meetings, so it's good to remind people it's happening. We know the Ithaca Festival has had its share of concerns, but it is happening, and the more we can get out and support it and be a part of it, it will be wonderful. I am pleased and just want to give a shout-out to a gentleman who works with me, Jay Stooks, who is the featured artist. He's one of our community artists. He's the featured artist of the Ithaca Festival. He is responsible for that beautiful, beautiful mural on the old library building that was just a welcome brightening of that corner in our community. So if you don't know Jay's work, that's an example of his work. He is the featured artist, and I really just wanted to give him a shout out because he does amazing community-minded work here in our community. So big ups to Jay.
Thank you, Leslie. Do you want to say the dates of the Ithaca Festival again?
It begins on the 29th of May and ends on the first, do I have that right? It's 4 days, Sunday. 29, 30, 1, 2, no, the second of May.
Thank you. Brian, then Carol.
All right. Thanks, Mike. I think it's probably a time where I can do my yearly PSA. As we all know, it's graduation time. Ithaca College just graduated last week, Cornell this weekend. I'm probably not going to get an opportunity on the 3rd. It sounds like it's going to be pretty busy on June 3rd. So I will speak to the high school graduates as well. It's certainly a joyous time and a lot of families. Unfortunately, I've seen a lot of tragedy associated with that. Just want to take an opportunity to tell everyone to please be festive, but also be safe. And if for some reason your behavior gets to the point where it's not safe, I would hope that those of us that observe it would step in. You know, seems every year we hear of tragedies associated with graduations, and it's really heart-wrenching, and I really hope that doesn't happen. So I would just want to say again, and I do say it every year, be festive, congratulations, but please be safe and keep your neighbors safe as well. Thanks.
Thank you. Carol.
Yeah, I have a timely announcement and my visual again.
Where's the camera?
Solar Tompkins is being rolled out next week. They'll watch for the press release and press conference. I believe it will be on Tuesday. Legislators are invited to attend. The public is invited to attend. I believe, Mike, you'll be speaking.
Planning to attend.
Yes, and since we still have these two lawn signs sitting here with hardware, I will make them available right over here in the corner to the first two takers. The Solar Tompkins people have more. You can go for information to solartompkins.org. This is the opportunity to save a lot of money putting solar, am I getting you here? Solar panels on the roof of your house at a discount along with your neighbors in a bulk purchasing agreement. There are tax advantages. You can lease if you don't have the wherewithal or don't the inclination to lay out the money. The payments for your lease would be less than the difference on your electricity bill. The Solar Tompkins Group has come to an agreement, I believe, that was satisfactory to the local installers. They will be choosing, instead of one contractor, there will be three chosen. So I think this is a win-win solution. And I'm looking forward to seeing, what is it, the aim, I think, is 500 solar installations, at least doubling, if not more, the number of houses in Tompkins County that are contributing to savings in energy.
Thank you, Carol. Martha?
Yeah, thanks for a second shot here. Dulia, just a quick note about the elevator. It is disturbing to hear that Mayor doesn't feel that there's an option about moving, but maybe that can still evolve. But I would say I think elevators to second floor and third floor levels on in our downtown buildings, those elevators are really important for upgrading, for accessibility, that you know, when they're put in there, I don't know, 100 more years ago, most didn't have elevators, and that's a real improvement. So that makes a difference for the long term for that use of that building. I just want to mention something I saw in the paper, and I started to make a couple phone calls about it. About Tioga in Tioga County, and it seems to affect Tompkins County as well. Changes in the Head Start program, which for Tioga County looks like a loss of a closing of Tioga Opportunities Head Start program, which has, I think, five different locations around Tioga County, has 50 jobs associated with it, 127 kids, and that means, you know, that's a large number of families that are at risk of losing their Head Start as of June 30th. Kind of just found out very quick, very suddenly, and I understand that Tompkins Community Actions Program is also kind of under negotiation with the feds, and I don't know what that means, but I'll be calling Lee Dillon about that as well. According to the paper, this came about with a change in the program in 2007, passed in 2007, that kind of put, instead of having programs be automatically recertified so they had, you know, consistent and stable funding and knowledge that their kids could be in a program for a number of years and stay with those teachers. Every year the programs were required to compete for the funding, and it seems that in this instance for Tioga Opportunities, there's a promise that some other agency will come in and provide the child care, but the community doesn't know who. There's no appeal available to the agency, and there's no information given to the agency about why they sort of didn't win the competition. One of the questions I'm going to be asking is, does this have to do with the sequester and funding cuts and a way of trying to pick winners and losers? And, of course, we want accountability to make sure those programs are quality and that the best programs are being provided for kids and families. But it seemed a pretty big shock to that community, and I hope we don't see a similar problem with closure in Tompkins County. So I just wanted people to be aware that I think it's it looks like a very serious problem, and I'm just not sure what the source of it is. I think the idea of forcing programs to compete for public dollars when we're trying desperately to, like in the Economic Development Committee, to really look at child care as something that we absolutely need more of and not less of, for families' development, for children's quality development, and for economic development. This is kind of an upsetting move in the wrong direction, it seems.
Thank you. Round again, Dooley, then Jim.
I just want to make it clear that I'm not opposed to elevators. I think they're important to get you to upper floors. I like escalators, too. It's the problem comes with the developers and the architects not figuring out how to accommodate continuation of this business. That's all.
Jim, and then Leslie.
Two things. To Martha's comment, we have a congressman in this district. The second comment, Dooley, in terms of, I have a son who works for DC Entertainment, and he's involved in graphic novels, had been an editor for many years. Paper magazines is not a growth industry anymore. Everything has moved to the internet. Graphic novels have moved to the internet, and magazine companies are getting out of the business as fast as they possibly can. And while when my children were young in high school, that was the gold standard job, to work at Mayer's. And they could never get it. There were always other people in front of them. But that they laughed about that for years. And my son had to take up a job in New York City so he could work with paper magazines. But that has changed. So the elevator in Cornell may be responsible for some of it, but the business is really turning away from what Mayer's does these days.
Leslie?
Yeah, we're moving away from that. I like picking up a good old book and feeling the paper between. But anyhow, if you will indulge me, Mr. Chair, I just want to make a very quick public service announcement. As people are leaving and traveling and getting ready for summer vacation plans, as a member of the Air Service Board, and especially to this group of individuals who are here who have a vast network to get information out and encourage people to use their services. We talk about economic development. The Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport really, really need all of us to be using that facility to fly out of Ithaca, to fly into Ithaca. People have this misrepresentation sometimes. I think that it is so much more expensive to fly out of Ithaca than it is to fly out of other places. Is that true occasionally? Yes, it is, and the same can go for any other regional airport. But we want to encourage you to please fly Ithaca. Stay with us and help us develop that economic arm of our county. It will help tremendously. So that's my public service announcement, and I encourage all of you to please pass the word on, share to family and friends who are coming for graduation or leaving on vacation to consider as a first choice flying out of Ithaca. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. Can we move on? We don't have a presentation tonight, so I'll just move on to my report and appointments. I wanted to report that on Friday, I, as chair, have been invited to a small meeting with a group of people from Tompkins County community leaders to talk to the Presidential Search Committee of the Cornell University Board of Trustees. And we have requested that meeting, and the group of us will be bringing forth to the chair of that committee the importance of their selection of a president who, and the purpose of that presidency is good for them, and it's good for the community, and the community is, as I've been told by Ms. Chalk, which is absolutely right, the community is good for Cornell University as well. And we'll be bringing forth some ideas there and letting them know that a president who pays attention to our community, as has the former presidents like Hunter Rawlings and David Skorton, is very important to us here. The other thing is, I see Graham Gillespie sitting out there. Graham, would you do me a favor and come up to the podium? Yes, Graham. Would you come up to the podium for me? Sure, wherever you're comfortable. I just wanted everyone to see you. Last Thursday, I was pleased to attend the presentation by Historic Ithaca, which annually gives awards to folks that have done sensitive historical preservation or restorations for buildings in Tompkins County. And Hold Architects was nominated for its fine program to refit this courtroom into our legislative chambers. And we were there. We had a nice presentation. I hope everyone read about it in the Ithaca Journal. There was an article, not only our project, but other great projects in Tompkins County and Ithaca as well. And I just wanted to say thanks to Holtz for doing that. They certainly deserve that award. And we actually got a nice certificate in a frame, which I had intended to bring tonight and show, but my truck broke down, and it's in the shop. It lost an alternator, and it's in the back of that, and I didn't have it to bring down tonight. But I'll bring it and leave it in the chambers. And I know, Graham, that you got one as well. But we want to say thank you to Holt. Graham is a principal of Holt Architects and the one who led this project. Thanks very much.
Mike, if I may, I mentioned to Mike that it's hard to have a great project if you don't have great clients. So on behalf of the design and construction team, thank you very much. Thank you for your patience. It was a long haul, but I think actually as a taxpayer, thank you for following through on the center of government suggestions and repurposing this beautiful space for your home. So thank you.
Thanks very much, Grant. Reports by the county administrator.
Thanks, Mike. I have a couple things on my list tonight. Beginning with department head searches, I've tried to keep you posted on how things are going with the two high-level department heads that will be transitioning over the course of the summer and early fall. With respect to the airport, we had our first interviews today. That process will continue into next week. The goal is to bring that into finalist interviews sometime within the next several weeks and then to come to closure with a decision on a replacement for Bob Nicholas sometime in mid-June. So that's making really good progress. Both Leslin and Dan Klein are on that search committee and participated today in those interviews. Personnel is also on track now to begin the process of searching for a replacement for Anita Fitzpatrick. The job is being posted. It will be posted through June 30th. At that point, the interviews will start. It seems to be the tradition that we do a first series of interviews, narrow the field to some finalists, and do finalist interviews. The goal is to complete that process sometime in August. Again, I think you recall, Anita is talking about taking her retirement late summer, early fall. So we're making good progress on both of those searches. You might be interested, too, to go to the webpage, look at the vacancy, look at the description of the personnel commissioner. I think we've done a pretty good job in explaining to potential applicants what that position is all about and why it's a great place to work. Completely different topic. We also talked at the last meeting about an initiative that I think Mike had suggested at the last TCOG meeting, which is to get together with local governments to begin talking about this shared service requirement under the tax freeze law and to look at what we might do to try to develop a report to the state that's required under that law sometime in early summer of next year. There was a meeting last Friday. Attendance was very good. We had mayors of Ithaca, Lansing, Cayuga Heights. We had the supervisors of Caroline, Lansing, and Dryden. Mike was there, as was Paula Younger and myself. I would characterize the first part of the meeting as a little bit of venting about a fairly impossible situation we've been put under to come up with a transformation of local government and the way it's structured by next June. That's a pretty ambitious milestone in a relatively adverse setting under the property tax freeze. At the same time, as the group began to talk, they agreed that it is worth taking a look at what else we might be able to do. So if I were to characterize where I think this process is going, it will be along two paths. One will be to take advantage of what is allowed by the state law, which is to look back and see what's already been done in this community to consolidate, merge, share services, promote efficiencies, and to be able to inventory what has been done. It's going to be a very long list, and try to put a value on that in terms of recurring savings that go along with those past successes. That's allowed by law, but as we've said, we don't know how far we're going to be allowed to look back. So we're going to answer that question by basically taking a full inventory of what we've all done, or at least try to, over the past, and be able to put that into a what we hope will be a compelling report. And we're developing a vehicle now where each municipality will be able to offer up what they have done so that inventory can be compiled kind of online in a central way. The other thing that will be looked at is forward-looking. What else is out there? Are there other shared services, efficiencies, and so forth that we can talk about over the course of the next year? There again, I think the spirit is we should take a hard look and see what's out there. I think the approach may be to break off into work groups that are organized around the functional areas of government, pick an area like law enforcement, highway, something like that, and then focus those work groups that focus on those functional areas and be able to come back with a report sometime before the deadlines next year, again, under the umbrella of TCOG. Resources are going to be an issue here. We did take a look. Paula went to a meeting of the state that's talking about local efficiency grants. This has been traditionally the way we've gotten money to look at things like the Health Benefits Consortium. She was told that there really is not money for these kinds of reconnaissance studies, that if we were looking at a study of a specific initiative, combining highway departments or whatever it might be, then they might have study money on a 50-50 matching basis. However, a study to do reconnaissance looks like it won't be eligible for funding. So we will look around for other resources. We've talked to Cornell. We will continue talking to Cornell about what it might be able to provide. We will do what we can. I think you know that the resources of this government are pretty stretched, and so that will be a challenge. At the same time, I think there's a lot of goodwill that has come out, again, of an initiative that Mike had suggested. We will be getting together next week or the week after as a follow-up meeting to the first meeting to keep talking about this. Another completely unrelated topic, but one that has come up tonight that does relate to the jail. The jail votes, both on the design and the bonding, will come before you at your next meeting on the 3rd. The only thing I wanted to offer there was, as a refresher, and if anybody's watching this on TV as well, as a refresher, take a look at the presentation that was done at Public Safety back in December, because I think there's a lot of good information in there. And as people are following the issue and as we're coming to the point of a vote, it's right on the main webpage of the county. It's in the bottom left-hand corner. Click it. And there's a lot of good information in there about what we already do with respect to ATIs. It shows a lot of statistics about how we rank relative to other counties in New York State on a whole lot of pertinent things. So I'd suggest that folks might want to take a look at that very quickly, just as a refresher in anticipation of that vote. About the last thing on my list, it's the tyranny of the short agenda tonight, relates to something that is kind of tied to ATI, and that is a new initiative that has defense attorneys assigned at the point of arraignment. So for the last couple of years, the state has been talking about the need for counsel at first appearance, they call it. So whenever someone is arrested and brought in to be put in front of a judge, that at that initial moment of contact with the system, that there be an attorney present to represent the client. This has been something that Judge Lippman has talked about for a long time. You know that I'm on the Indigent Defense Board, and we've talked a lot about this specifically. How do you do it? Where's the money going to come from to initiate it? And I think I've informed you in the past that there are grants that have been created that are really seed money that fund pilots to allow this to start with the state picking up the tab. Well, last year, the state did award the county a three-year grant, $39,000 a year, to begin doing this in Tompkins County, to pay for the additional cost that would go along with that assignment of attorney at first appearance. That is now beginning to roll out. So Judge Mulvey had a meeting with the judicial folks yesterday. The DA was there, to let them know that this is now going to be something that we will be doing in Tompkins County, again, funded with state money, this three-year grant. It's interesting that it's happening now because if you've been going to the task force meetings, you may have heard folks like Mark Dresser say that one way that we can avoid sending people to jail is if there is an attorney present at the point of that initial contact, because right now we have to rely on a criminal history and what we can size up about an individual, and sometimes we will err on the side of caution. If there is an attorney there, often a decision is made that person can be released, that the attorney can vouch for the character, the fact that the individual will return to court, and that sometimes eases release. So in terms of what we are doing with respect to alternatives and trying to reduce the jail population, this does fit into that. As I say this, I want you to know, too, this is not another state mandate. The state hasn't said, you must do this. The state has said, if you want to take part in some pilots to see how it works, we will pay you to do that and cover the full cost. And that's what is happening right now. The very last thing on my fairly random agenda here, I think I've let you know also, but I'm not sure, that negotiations are underway with AES, now CPP. The pilot agreement that we've been living under for the last 3 years, 2015, will be the last year that's operative. So we need to negotiate a successor agreement. So we've had an internal team meeting so far with county reps, the IDA, the town, and the school, Lansing School District. We will be meeting with CPP folks, I think it's next week of the, I think it's the 10th of June, to talk about, to really sit down and begin negotiations in earnest of that replacement agreement. And the last thing that my deputy has compelled me to say as a part of my report, if you feel a sense of pride, release, liberation, and so forth coming out of the third floor of the old jail, it's because a fellow you've come to know, Cameron Younger will be graduating from Cornell University this weekend, and my youngest graduated from Geneseo last weekend, so there's this sense of relief and so that's as disjointed of a presentation as I'm able to make, but there were a few things that we needed to talk about.
Questions I have, Brian, then Martha.
Yeah, and actually my question is not what you might think it would be having to do with the jail, although I do have to agree with you that having an attorney at initial arraignment probably will not save the county any money, but as I think about it, it may not cost us any money either, because a lot of times it's that second appearance with counsel where you have bail reduction and those sorts of things, which also leads to why in a lot of cases people are incarcerated for a day or two. That may alleviate a good bit of that. My question was, though, and I think it was like 5 points ago, I think. It just seems interesting to me that with the state cap and the carrots or the, you know, almost the propaganda with rebates and so on and so forth, and a pushing towards shared services and consolidations and all of that, that unless you have a specific consolidated service, you're not eligible for any funding from the state. However, it would seem to me that the smart way to do it is exactly what you're doing. Call it recognizance or reconnaissance. But you need to know where you are before you know where you're going. And that, a lot of times, is a bigger challenge. And, you know, I'll say it again, as we do in a lot of cases here, we already do this pretty good. Can it be better? Sure. Of course it can. But to take an inventory is a real smart way to do it, and it's unfortunate that that's not mandated and funded, and then look at specific items that could be consolidated or shared or so forth. It just seems a little backwards to me, but that's it. That's all I have.
Arthur Robertson.
Yeah, this thing about shared services used to be a lot of carrot and no stick, and now it's a lot of stick and no carrot, and or a little tiny carrot. I mean, they used to give localities money to do this kind of research, and you know, so it is. It's really disturbing, but I encourage everybody to keep working on that. On the grant for assigned counsel at the first appearance, you and I talked last night. Does that money cover the ADAs showing up also? Because you said where there's an attorney for defense, there has to be prosecution.
We're not sure. That's something that Julia is going to be checking on. The way the grant was sized, it assumed a certain volume of cases that would occur over the course of a week. I think they assumed 10 per week. And by the way, we're not talking about a huge volume of cases here. So the grant was sized based on 10 per week. The actual experience has been less than 10 per week. So there might be resources that could be applied, but we're not sure that the grant will allow it to be to support the district attorney as well as the defense side of operations.
And you're just talking right now the pilot that's in Dryden?
Well, the pilot has been in Dryden, but it will now go countywide. So this $39,000 covers a countywide approach. And again, it's only, I talked to Julia today, expected volume, probably inflated, is 10 per week.
Okay. And then, so it is interesting then. I think maybe it'll save us money, although if the DA side of it is included, if you look at the full cost, it may be a wash. But obviously it seems like a really good idea. Do we know yet if it's a mandate, or is this, what's the story about
It is not a mandate, and again, this was really important for me to nail down. I did double check with the state to make sure this isn't a mandate disguised as a grant program. It's not, because I've been very adamant in Albany about this. It is not a mandate. It is offering counties money to allow them to do pilots. The idea is once the pilots are done, the state will then be able to look to see what works. And they can share those ideas with other counties, and some of the things that seem to be impossible barriers, maybe they've been addressed in other counties by these pilots. That's the goal.
Okay. And just for you and the deputy, does this mean student loans are over too?
No.
Probably not.
Maybe for her.
Congratulations.
Reports from the county attorney, Jonathan Wood.
Excuse me. One of the public speakers inspired me to say something about my office. As you all probably know, my office prosecutes juvenile delinquents and juvenile cases. Juvenile delinquents are people who, age 15 or less, who commit an act which, if committed by an adult, would be a crime. And in the event someone is found to have done such an event or such acts, there are many potential penalties, including placement. The most serious placement is that a juvenile can face is to be put with what they call OCFS, the Office of Children and Family Services. But I can assure you there are none in the Tompkins County Jail. And there are certainly none being transferred to other jails in other counties. So that's my report.
Thank you, Jonathan. Our Director of Finance, Rick Snyder.
I'd like to present the sales tax report for April, and it's on page 8A of your agenda packet. If you go to the second section, marked county, in the middle part of the page, you can read along with me. The sales tax distributions for April for the county were up 5.38% compared to last year. Moving all the way to the right-hand column, you can see that the year-to-date tax distributions for the county's portion totaled $10,209,559 compared to $10,030,662 in 2013. This represents an increase of 1.78%. So that's our yearly increase compared to last year at this time, the year-to-date compared to year-to-date last year, 1.78% increase. According to the sales tax distribution summary, we should be at 33.33% of our budget, and we are currently at 31.1% of our budget. That's all I have.
Thank you, Rick. Questions? Martha?
How big of a problem is that gap?
That figure is probably in the $600,000 figure at this point in time. But historically, and looking where we were at in previous years, that's about right where we are. Or that's right where we have been in past years at this point in time. A little bit under budget by about 2%.
We usually make it up later.
And we usually make it up later in the heavier months. We've gone through some weak months. But the recovery has been quite good compared to a very anemic January and February. So March and April have really been quite good.
Great.
Peter Stein.
Which year is Christmas?
Peter, use the microphone, please.
Which year is Christmas? Do we get Christmas in the year in which it took place, or does that come in the next, in the first few months?
Well, we get it in the following year. The actual cash comes in the next year, but we use a accrual method of accounting, so it counts for that month on our books in the previous.
Okay, so we don't have last year's Christmas on our. Huh?
Oh, yes.
Oh, we do have the payments for last
this year?
Yeah.
It is in last year's books.
Okay.
It is in last year's books.
Brian Robinson.
Just real quick, and in the interest of fairness, Rick, I think you told me earlier today you have a graduate as well.
Yes, I do.
Hey.
In Florida, I'll be traveling down to watch him. I have a wedding to go to and a graduation to go to.
All right. Congratulations.
And you're flying Ithaca, no less.
I am driving, but my son, who was just up here this past week to help me move, and that's another success story, he did fly into Ithaca and left via Ithaca Airport.
Woohoo!
Glad to hear it. Resolutions to be added and withdrawn from the agenda. Jim?
Thank you, Michael. I would like to withdraw Resolution E, which is establishment of guidelines and fiscal targets for all county budgeting units, et cetera.
That is withdrawn. Anything else? Through the consent agenda, I have one advisory board appointment to the Environmental Management Council, Ben Carver of the Village of Trumansburg. Term expires 12/31/15. Resolution A. Again, if anyone wants any of these off, they just speak. Resolution A, authorization for public hearing, Tompkins-Cortland Community College operating budget. That's out of the Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Out of public safety is Resolution B, 4834, authorization to appropriate Department of Homeland Security grant funding. Resolution C, budget adjustment.
Can you
out of
off?
That's off. That's Health and Human Services. For those items, an appointment on the consent agenda, may I have a motion to approve? Brian, seconded by Leslin. All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. Let's reorder a little bit. I see we have Joan Jerkowitz from planning. I'd like to go to planning at this point. Carol?
Oh, thank you. I'll start with the resolution. This is Resolution D, let me ask my colleagues. There have been some what I would consider manifest changes suggested by Legislator Kiefer. I consider them friendly if you want to do them as an amendment, but I also just consider them details. What's in the packets was what came out of committee. Do people want me to move what came out of committee and then need to amend, or can I consider the manifest changes?
Kathy?
I would support these, but I do not consider them manifest changes.
All right, so we're having an objection.
Then
so
I
let's
will.
Let's move it as adopted by committee and then
point of order. What does manifest mean?
Changes that,
spelling errors.
Obvious, I think.
Sort of more minor details that are not content-oriented, that are just corrections to...
Yeah, I understand. It's just the funny use of the word.
So I will move then Resolution D, appropriation from contingent fund and acceptance of grant for the relocation of New York State Department of Transportation, NYSDOT, maintenance facility feasibility study and related budget adjustments and transfers. And I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Martha Robertson. Discussion. Dooley?
I passed out before the meeting copies of the wording changes that I hope to make in this resolution, and I'd like to move them together. One is a reordering of the words in the title of the resolution to indicate that it's an acceptance of a grant for a feasibility study of the relocation, et cetera. And the others are in lines 11 and 14, where it's made clear that the award of the grant is in the amount of $56,000, and then later that the county and the city have jointly agreed to provide the $56,000 local match to So those are the three changes I'd like to offer.
Is there a second?
I consider those...
Seconded by Kathy.
I consider those friendly...
Well, it's been moved as an amendment. So any discussion on the amendment? All those in favor of the amendment? Raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Point of order. If they're friendly, I don't think we have to vote on it.
No, we just did.
Okay.
Thank you. That's unanimous. Now proceed, Carol.
Okay,
please.
Yes. Well, actually, I'm going to ask Joan Jerkovich to come to the microphone since she came and sat here for, 2 hours, for the chance to tell us a little bit more about what this is.
Is this on? I can't tell.
Joan, why don't you sit right in the front?
Oh. Approximately 8 months ago, the Planning Department submitted an application for grant funds from the, actually from two sources, but we awarded the funds through the Local Waterfront Revitalization Program. And the application was just kind of take the next step in trying to get, to encourage New York State to relocate the maintenance facility from the waterfront site on Cuga Inlet in the city of Ithaca to land they've already acquired in the village of Dryden, which would combine their facilities both from Ithaca and Cortland into one joint maintenance facility. The matching funds would be jointly provided by the, or is proposed to be jointly provided by the city of Ithaca and Tompkins County. I guess I'll leave it at that and answer any questions you may have.
Jim Dennis, then Dooley, then Martha.
Thank you, Michael. Joan, is there any interest on the part of the state for doing this project?
Yes. Over time, they've expressed an interest in doing so. Approximately 5 or 6 years ago, they announced that they would relocate the facility within 5 years. Needless to say,
6 years, and where are we today?
They still have not done it. I understand it's an issue of funding on their end, but the people I've talked to at DOT years ago were more than supportive of the idea. It was just where it was on their priority list.
But if I called somebody in DOT today, what would they say?
Depends on who you talk to. No. Yeah.
I mean,
they've agreed to participate in this study, to send a representative and participate in this. They've already acquired the property in Dryden. I would say they are supportive of the idea.
So there'll be a representative from DOT in this then?
Yeah, on the project team overseeing this study.
But they're still in the same boat. They don't have any money.
John, do you need to make a point?
A part of the feasibility study will be looking at financing opportunities that would help the state make the move.
Thank you.
I was going to say, we actually about 10 years ago had a written agreement that they were going to do this, and then they just didn't do it.
Dooley?
I'm not sure what is being looked at in the feasibility study. I don't know whether it's going to include feasibility, what could be done on the property that would be freed up. I don't know. Well, we haven't seen what the grant spelled out, so if you could just tell me what's being looked at, that would be great.
There's actually several elements that would be included in the study. One of which I mentioned already, to look at how the financing for the state to move the facility might be accomplished. Another part is to actually look at the physical characteristics of the site to see what type of physical development it can support, so doing things like soil borings and the like to determine the capacity of the site. They will also be doing a market study to identify what types of uses would be appropriate for the site and actually putting together some tentative site plans, some alternative site plans, and then investigating the potential impact on the environment, transportation, and other things of that potential site plan. So
Martha.
It's pretty wide-ranging.
Martha?
Who is doing this?
We are scheduled to put out an RFP once the county accepts the grant funds.
Martha?
Yeah, first I want to say thank you for the very cool map. I mean, it's great to see the whole area. And then, for one thing, to look at the scope of the Cuga Waterfront Trail. I mean, that's really stunning when you look at it all in one piece. It's great.
For a little bit of background, the issue of the traffic area, if the traffic configuration, if this site were developed, Joan, your department led a grant, a study, God, everything feels like 10 years ago,
yes,
about that whole area at, relative mm-hmm. to the farmers market and the train tracks, and I remember being part of some of those meetings. So we have some of that information. Obviously, would need to be updated, but this is a whole, this whole area has been looked at in pretty thorough detail, you know, by in terms of a planning and traffic study. So there's that little piece that we already have. A little bit of background on this. Must have been in January, early in 2011, or whenever it was, when the maybe it was later in 2011, when the governor's regional councils got started. I was the representative to the Southern Tier Regional Council. I went to the first meeting, and Carolyn Peterson was mayor. We had heard in early 2011 that the state wanted to put a cell tower on this site. What ensued was, so forget what I said about the regional councils for a second. So what ensued was a lot of lobbying and a lot of hand-wringing, a lot of real concern about what's going to happen to this site. If they put a cell tower on this site, which came completely out of the blue to the local governments, the city and the county, and the town of Dryden, which, you know, or village of Dryden, where the site had been purchased for the move. So we were all extremely upset. We contacted our state senators, contacted Barbara Lifton, the Chamber of Commerce got involved. There was a lot of activity trying to make this not happen so they wouldn't have a cell tower put down there. Fast forward a few months, the regional council start meeting. The first meeting we have, Lieutenant Governor Duffy comes in and says, makes a grand speech about how one of the purposes of these councils is to cut through bureaucracy. If local government is trying to do something on economic development and you're having trouble with the bureaucracy at the state level, one agency says you can do this, another agency says you can't, or there's some regulation that's in your way, let us know. We're going to cut through the red tape. Carolyn and I, like, look at each other. We think about this problem with the cell tower. So in the break, we ran over to Lieutenant Governor. We said, explained, you know, an elevator speech about this issue. And he looks at the director of the council, Kevin McLaughlin, and says, Kevin, fix this. What ensued were months of back and forth and behind the scenes, and you know how that's how they do it. But we got very, very, very clear word that the state had eliminated the cell tower option, which had been desired by the state police, by the way. And the governor's office had figured out a way that they coaxed them out of that desire. We said, great, everybody's relieved. Now we want to do this thing and get DOT to actually move. So Kevin made it very clear probably a year ago. Okay, what we need is a feasibility study. We need the local government to show what you want to do there, what the potential is, what all the options might be. We want to see local commitment to the project. What you should do, Kevin said, to the city and county, is put in a CFA, an application for funding for a feasibility study. So we did. And it got funded. So the state, that's why the state is on here at the 56,000, right? Is this right, Joan? The 56,000 is that state funding.
That's correct.
So that's their share. What's here is our share, and this obviously the city's share, to show local commitment to making this happen. And then they will have the pieces in place that they need to kind of really move the bureaucracy and get DOT whatever it needs to move out to Dryden. In other words, they need to make the case internally that there's a better, higher use for this site. This feasibility study is what's needed to do that. So right this minute, the bureaucrats in DOT don't. No, it's true. They don't care. They're fine where they are. They think. You know, some of us think that actually it's more efficient, and while the governor is all running around trying to get us, the rest of us, to consolidate, it might be a good idea to take the one in Cortland and the one in Ithaca and consolidate in Dryden. I think that might save a couple bucks. Well, in order to get DOT to do that, they need this piece of the puzzle. So I think this is really important. I think it's a great opportunity for us to move this long simmering project forward, and that's just a long story so people understand that it does depend on who you call at DOT, I'm sure, what answer you'll get. But there really is a backstory here, and the state wants this to. My understanding is the people who can make it happen at the state want this to happen.
Carol Chalk.
Yeah, I don't have a question. I was going to say some of what Martha said already about the map really speaks volumes about what this project will help do for the county and the city, if whether we're looking at the strategic tourism plan for lakefront access, economic development activities, potential for highest rate of taxes from a property compared to the sites that we're looking at as potentials for the DOT. This provides it. And if you look at the history, we've worked closely for many, many years with Dryden to work out the arrangement that was worked out back then. It came out of PEAK, which is quite a bipartisan committee with unanimous support. And you've heard about it before. This isn't the first time we're hearing about this. So I would urge us to proceed to a vote.
Julie Kiefer, then Mike Sigler.
Well, I didn't think I'd ever hear myself say I feel sorry for DOT, but when this was first proposed, they had a particular structure statewide and had a list of priorities that they were going to work through. This was not at the top of their list. There were things more important to them structurally than combining at a site in Dryden. Since that time, DOT has been reorganized and is so short of funds for maintaining basic infrastructure. That's largely the federal government's fault, but it's also New York State's fault, that I don't want to speak against the effort to get them off of our lake site, but in terms of what state money should be spent for simple infrastructure repair and maintenance, this is really not such a great deal. So it's a funny feeling I have about it.
Mike Sigler.
No, I'm glad we're doing this study. I suspect that the property is probably polluted, and that may be why the state is dragging its feet, because they particularly don't want to clean it up. But, I mean, I think this study will.
Joan?
There actually was some preliminary look at the site way back in the original discussions. They did what's called a phase one analysis, and they did not find any contamination in the site. Something else may come up, but at the time, nothing was found. But that was looked into because of what's stored there. There was some concern.
Mike, did you finish?
Yes, no, and that was great. Thank
Martha,
you.
Then me.
Yeah, Julie, if maintenance funding, if ongoing funding is what's short, it seems the capital fund to move to one new facility is findable, probably more findable than the money to operate two separate facilities that, when you could have one that serves two counties,
I'm not opposed to it at all. I just think that the greatest need in the state is for infrastructure repair.
Right, and this should, I would think, free up money from, instead of operating two facilities, they'll be having one.
I'm next, then you, Carol. I was on the original committee, the small group, and then the committee that began looking at this process, and I think it would still be a good thing to move this facility off of the waterfront. That waterfront land could be much more valuable for other purposes, for the city and for the county. What I am concerned about, and expressed that at budget time last year, was I didn't want to spend more money on this county project if there was not a chance of it happening. And that's why I moved that we put it into contingency at that time. At that time, it was my understanding, maybe I wasn't getting it all right, but it was my understanding that this was basically a city initiative, and they were looking to do this feasibility study, and I wasn't hearing at the time anything that seemed to indicate that DOT had changed its position. And I don't think it has, based on what we've heard. However, Martha has given us a history today, and she did call me up ahead of time to explain this to me, and it added an element that I was not aware of, and that was this part about the Regional Economic Development Committee suggesting that this procedure go forward in order to be able to have state sponsorship of this and to go further to try to set up a plan to actually have it happen. When we had this on the radar scope 10 years ago, one of our state senators, Senator Seward, had actually reserved, I believe, $1.5 million or $2 million at the state level for this project. And it was going to go ahead and fund this. However, times got bad, that money went away, the authority of the legislators to focus on member projects kind of went away. So now I'm left in this question of whether I want to support this resolution or not. I think if it has an opportunity at the state level to make this thing happen, then I will support it. And that's what I'm hearing tonight, which is different than I was hearing at budget time last year. Martha.
Not to monopolize.
Sorry, Carol was next, then Martha.
Oh, well, I just had a quip. I think that part of the point of the feasibility study is to figure out a lot of these questions. My quip was maybe we can find a way as part of the feasibility to see if it's feasible for us and Cortland County to count this among our shared services.
Martha?
Yeah, when we were looking at this at expanded budget last year, the state hadn't made their decision on our CFA application. We didn't know whether our application was going to be successful.
Right.
So it made sense to put it in contingency, the contingency being if we get this grant from the state, then we'll have the money. And if we don't get the grant from the state, it didn't commit us to spending it on something that, you know, didn't have the foundation. So that's what the contingency was. And subsequently, we found out, yes, we got the grant. They made the announcements in December. So, I think that this puts it in place, and it makes sense to do it this way and at this time.
Brian?
I'd just like to say it seems to me to be a, as far as our commitment, a relatively small amount of money which may lead to the development of some very high-dollar property down the line, revenue-wise, for all involved. So I will be supporting it.
Anyone else? Dan.
Has the City of Ithaca voted to commit this funds already?
It is on their schedule tomorrow night for the City Administration Committee to act, and it's on their June 4th agenda for Common Council. So they have not acted yet, but it's going through their normal process, roughly parallel to ours.
Just a what-if scenario. What if we were to approve this and they weren't? Where does the grant stand at that moment?
I can guarantee you we won't sign any paperwork until the city. We won't accept the grant, signing the paperwork at the staff level until the city has committed those funds.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anything else? Ready to vote? This requires a short form roll call vote.
Mr. Robinson?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Are there any, does anyone want to be reported as no? That's unanimous.
Thank you, everybody.
Carol, anything else?
Would you like me to, yes, well, very briefly. Watch for the announcement about the exact time and location of the Solar Tompkins rollout, and the committee, the independent committee, has asked and is encouraging legislators to attend. I will be out of town, so I hope that other people will consider attending. I think it's going to be in the morning, what they were looking at, a week from today. The Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee will be meeting tomorrow at 3:30 in the afternoon. Where? Over at the old jail.
That's okay, thank you. Thank you, Carol. It's 7:30. We will go into our break. I just want to remind anyone and the people out in the audience that if you haven't had a chance to go to your school board and vote, please do that. We'll recess for 10 minutes. Let's take our seats, please.
Because usually it grabs on the clothing.
Grabbed onto the beard.
Started bring it, put it right on the desk.
I laughed so hard.
Okay, folks, let's go to the top of the agenda, the Government Operations Committee. Julie Kiefer is the vice chair.
Government Operations did not meet since the last legislative meeting and is going to meet on the 27th of May at 5:30 p.m.
Any questions for Dewey? Charter Review Committee will meet again on June 4th at 3:30. And we've invited representatives from the City of Ithaca to come in and talk to us about their vision for this property. I'm sorry?
You're mixing them up there, Mike.
I got sure.
OJC.
They're coming to the old library committee. Yes. You're right. Anyway, charter, we'll continue talking about the charter. We will be having a discussion about the public works group, the various divisions. Among other things, we will take another look at the section of that charter which talks about a public works commissioner. And we will also look at whether or not the various divisions might be better served if they were actually departments unto themselves. So we're going to have an interesting discussion at Charter Review about that.
Or did they belong somewhere else?
I'm sorry?
I'm talking to Jeff.
Oh, okay. Dan?
No, I was just pointing who was talking.
Now the old library committee, which meets the next day on June 5th, and we will be hearing from the City of Ithaca about their plans for that area, their desires for that area of the old library, their zoning, their historic district, what kinds of deeds they feel the city has. And although they will not be directing this process, we do think it's very important that we hear from them. Kathy.
Thank you, Mike. I had a request recently, and I forwarded it to Kathy, about when the RFPs, even redacted, will show up on the county's website. They apparently thought they hadn't shown up yet.
The REIFs? I believe they're there.
Yeah.
Marcia?
Yeah.
She thinks they're there. Maybe you could help Kathy figure out how to get there.
Okay, well, there was also a... you read the email. I can't remember the details of it because I read it in a hurry, but I'll send it to all the committee members. Thanks,
Kathy. Martha?
Yeah, Mike, I don't know if I missed something, which is entirely possible. I know Kathy got appointed to the committee. Is that the
Kathy's
form?
Been appointed to the committee, and also Mike Sigler's been appointed to the committee.
Oh, okay. So it's five now.
So we now have five members. Okay. And if in the future something changes and Carol's able to rejoin us, she'll be added as a sixth member. Dave?
Yeah, Mike, I'd like to just make a public service announcement, if I might. The broadband committee will be actually meeting on the 29th in the Scott Hayman Conference Room to discuss net neutrality, and it will be at 5:30.
Thank you for that notice. Moving on to Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Jim Dennis, Chair.
Thank you, Michael. Ordinarily, friends, we would have been voting this evening on the fiscal targets that would have resulted from a vote before that of a levy target that we would have set. As you all remember, we haven't set a levy target, and so that was the major reason I pulled from the agenda the guidelines and fiscal targets. But it is my impression, and Michael and Joe will broaden the discussion, that the county administrator by its charter is the budget officer. So he has an obligation, a responsibility to put guidelines and fiscal targets together and inform the department heads on how the whole process is going to work for them in the 2015 budget and what they have to do. Meanwhile, we will hopefully at the next meeting follow along with, one, setting a levy, two, doing the guidelines and fiscal targets that were a part of that resolution that I pulled.
Jim, I would agree that we, under the charter, have given our county administrator the position of being the budget, the person who puts together our budget officer. And it's important that he be able to do that in a timely fashion and be able to do it with the help and assistance of the department heads, and they know what they're going to need to do to put together the budget that's going to come out in the fall, early fall. And so I think it's very important that Joe proceed. There are seven votes we know of on this legislature for a target, a fiscal target of the 2.36%, which is our tax levy cap. And I think to not proceed at this point with that understanding would be tantamount to putting us back at least 2 weeks, maybe 4 weeks in the process. And I would defer to Joe to explain where he is and what that would do if we don't proceed.
Yeah, and that delay is an important delay, too, and it causes some concern. I think when you've listened to Amy Hendricks, Kathy Schlatter, some others who involve community members in funding allocation decisions to help prioritize things, to start building the budget, you know that occurs at the front end of the process. So providing them direction early is very helpful for them to get the process going. Also, we like to give departments as much direction as we can, as quickly as we can, because these budgets are very complex. And if we wait 2 weeks to give them spending targets, it's going to throw things back 2 weeks, which we could do by making your review of the budget 2 weeks shorter. And I think that's a dangerous thing to do, given that I think this is going to be a tough budget. So I think will make sense is for me to give direction to departments and agencies virtually immediately to base their targets on the tax cap levy, the 2.36% levy, which would require departments to reduce their adjusted 2014 budget by 1%, to reduce it by 1%. That's after the adjustments we make for the uncontrollables.
For agencies, which we had talked about raising by 2%, but then they're subject to a 1% cut, the shorthand of that is a plus 1% for the agencies. To be able to get that out to the departments and agencies quickly so that they can begin to build their budgets. Now, if the legislature returns in 2 weeks, and I hope you do, to approve the levy goal and the spending targets, if you come up with a different approach than that, a different number than that, it will not be difficult for me to then give new direction to departments and agencies so that they can adjust to that. But if we can get word to them tomorrow to begin starting on this cap-based target, that'll be a great help to the process. So that's what I think I'll need to do to get things going. And again, it doesn't undermine your rights to establish the goal and the spending targets in 2 weeks when you have a full contingent here.
Dooley?
I am under the impression that we generally finish our budget work earlier than we need to. We have a certain time period by which we have to finish. I think it's in December sometime, and we usually finish well ahead of that. So a 2-week delay doesn't seem like such a bad thing to me, although it obviously does to you.
Yeah, it does. It does. And I think, again, we've had the last couple of years, I don't want to call any budget easy ever. They've been pretty straightforward. I do think this will be a more complicated budget. I think there'll be more OTRs that may come in unfunded. So you're going to want the time to take a careful review at these requests before you complete that process. I just worry that taking 2 weeks away from it will not lead to a better product.
Well, if we set the levy higher, there would not be more OTRs.
And you may choose to do that at your meeting. It would be easier for a department to adjust to being given more money than to start basing their budget on a higher target and then have to cut weeks into the process. So, again, I think the best course is to begin with a cap, make sure that they know that they, like always, can ask for OTRs. That becomes a part of the process. And then you come back in 2 weeks and pass that legislation that I think is a really important part of the process.
Carol?
We learned out at the TC3 budget presentation from the response from the Cortland County legislators that they haven't begun to do the kinds of things that we do. And I'm curious if there's anybody in the state who has a longer budget process than we do. I don't think it's appropriate. I think it is appropriate that this got pulled from the agenda, because I don't think it's really appropriate to give our department heads a firm, you know, expectation until the legislature's done that. And we obviously didn't do that before. And I think that our department heads are pretty experienced at putting together budgets, understanding, you know, what they need to do to have in mind their highest priorities and the things that they'll cut if they need to. So I kind of trust our department heads to be able to deal with it. If it were a difference, if we were talking about the difference between, you know, a 0% and a 10%, yes, but the fractions of a percent that we are that we had sort of come down to in differences are small enough that I trust our department heads to be able to deal with the 2-week difference without having to change our schedule for the fall.
I have Martha, then Jim, then Will.
And then Joe had his hand up also.
Well, just to answer some of your questions, Carol, does anybody take longer? Onondaga is on the same schedule that we are, basically. So I'm accustomed to the schedule. Do others do it in less time? They do, like Cortland County, that now is looking to adopt our plan. They like the fact that we start early, that we give clear direction to departments. Departments know how to build their budget, and that helps. This is a really good process. So they are looking to start like we do and have the same process that we do. Can department heads adjust? Yeah, but it's certainly better if they can get off to start. They only have 30 or 35 working days to develop their budgets for the next year. And some, as you know, are incredibly complex. So if you reduce the time that they have, will that hurt them? Yeah, that'll make it more difficult. If you push the process back into your court and reduce the time that you have to review it, I do think that you will regret that. You're going to want time to spend to review these budgets this year. So, again, we're trying to balance a number of things. And I think what the outcome is to give initial direction. But, again, we want the legislature to come back on the 3rd, approve something. If it's different than that initial direction, we can instruct the departments to adjust their targets. But at least we'll get them going.
Martha?
I think this is a good strategy. Now, so you're saying that our next meeting we would have the levy, the target resolution, and this version of the target resolution.
Exactly.
We're usually, as we see this time, we usually have it the first meeting and then the second one 2 weeks later. So we're going to put those two things together.
Exactly.
And I think that's good, and I think this is having you go ahead with your staff, you know, is a logical thing to do, and appreciate your taking that initiative.
Jim?
Yes, and there will be two things from this committee, and there will also be the jail vote. So take an afternoon nap.
Will?
Good suggestion, Jim. I think I support this approach, and I say that as somebody who would like a higher levy. I thought seriously actually about changing my vote so that we could at least get the process in motion. But I was pretty uncomfortable because I would like to hold out. I truly feel that we are going to collectively come to the conclusion that we can't make this work. I don't know that, but that's what I think we're going to go. I want the process to start, and I think it should start precisely as you've outlined.
Peter?
What do I know about this? I've never prepared a budget in my life for anything, including for my household or for my work. That's just the way it works out. But I did listen to a wife do one of these county budgets year after year, and boy, was it painful to listen to, okay? And I know in my heart that if I were a chair of a committee, I would much rather have more time. I'd be looking at the calendar, and I'd want more time to think about it. And what would I want to think about? I want to think about is how can I possibly make any cuts? It's not easy. And so if you gave me the choice of more time to think through a low budget than to not have that time to do it with the possibility that it'll end up as a low budget, I would certainly take the first thing. It's going to be a lot easier if we come out with a higher thing in a couple of weeks. It's easier to find what else can you do than it is to find what else can you take away. So in case that isn't clear, I'm speaking for the approach.
Kathy.
Thank you. It sounds as though this is Joe's prerogative anyway, and that he can do this. And so it doesn't sound as though we're going to vote on this. I'll support it. The kind of questions that come up for me, though, and I think I know the answer to one of them, is this unprecedented? I think the answer is no. And any of y'all with historical memory on this, I think we have had times before when the county administrator has gone ahead and given instructions to the staff as to how to prepare with a goal so that things could get started. Y'all correct me if I'm wrong. So the only caveat I would have for that, being concerned as I am about messages to the public, is that, you know, we make clear that this has to do with the way that we're deliberating about the budget and that we're being cautious, but at the same time we need to make sure that we have enough time to do so. Not that we're abdicating any of our responsibility, because In my opinion, I agree with what's been said. This is going to be a really tough budget. And in some ways, I agree with what Will said about we may decide that we can't do it any other way, but the way I look at it is a little bit opposite, and that is we could do it, but it would be, as Don Barber said, evisceration. So I think we're going to need to have some some time to think about this, and that's one of the main reasons that I would certainly agree if there was a vote, which, as I said before, there doesn't seem to be. So does anyone have history on whether this is unprecedented or not?
John, please use the mic.
Sure, I'm sorry. My recollection is this began with Steve Witcher, who wanted that and agreed, and before that we did not do it that way. And it's the legislator's prerogative. I mean, there's no legal requirement for it. And it was decided both by the county administrator and the legislature at that time that it would be a good way to proceed. But before that, we didn't do that.
Thanks.
Okay. Jim, anything more on your report?
No. That would conclude my report. I believe we'll be meeting May 27th, if we can figure that out, right? Both Michelle and Kathy. And I know there's a GO meeting at the same time. So
right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim. Yes.
So I have actually had a question for Dave on the broadband report
well,
that
ahead.
He gave. Okay. Thank you. Dave, first, what was the date that you set for, said for that? And
29th.
The 29th.
May 29th. 5:30.
At 5:30. So that's the same May we're talking about. That's during the Ithaca Festival parade. Okay. I don't know if that's going to affect your committee attendance. You said that the main item on the agenda is net neutrality. Can you tell us anything more about what aspects of this, you know, what the nature of the discussion is that relates to our broadband?
Trying to decide if it has any effect on our broadband in this county, if we're going to, you know, what can we do about it, and what should we do about it? And I'll be the first to tell you that I don't know a whole lot about it yet, but I will by the time the meeting comes.
Okay. Well, it is a very interesting question, and if the committee, you know, decides that they would like our legislature to weigh in about this vital issue, if that's going to affect the speed of the connection that our residents are going to get to experience when here what we're trying to do is bring them into parity with the rest of the world, then, you know, feel free, please, to bring back something to this body.
You know, the telephone has been neutral for years. Basically, everybody gets the same service. And neutrality would be nice if we had it on the broadband. But if it's not, if they can have different levels of service, depending on your income or what have you, it may not be so good.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Let's go to the Public Safety Committee. Brian Robinson is our chair.
Thanks, Mike. The Public Safety Committee has not met since our last meeting. However, as you know, we did have the public hearing, public informational session, for the ATI task force last night, and as a couple have already said, I thought it was fairly well attended. I thought there were some real interesting things that were brought up, and there was some clarifications, if you will, misconceptions maybe that got cleared up, to be honest, I know Will's probably actually been to more meetings than I have, but that seems to be the case with that committee since it started till now. And as he said, there are a lot of variables into a lot of different things that land people in jail, and I think a lot of those are getting cleared up. So between that and some good ideas, I know that a lot of notes were being taken by members of the task force last night, and you know, I have every confidence that they're certainly going to take all of those into consideration. And as we know, we're expecting back to this body some recommendations from them at a later point this summer. So I have no idea when the next meeting is. But I do know that it's probably, or I, yes, it is going to be after the June 3rd meeting here. So there,
I thought you were going to say you didn't know, but it was going to be terrific.
Could be. Could be. One never knows. But I'd be happy to answer any questions if anybody has any.
Questions for Brian. Okay, move along to Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Leslie McBean Claiborne is our chair.
The Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee will meet next week. Just as a quick update, I'd let you all know at our last meeting that we did get five or six responses, I can't remember the number, to our RFP for the county workforce climate survey, and we have assembled, or at least committed, a small group of individuals from within county government as well as within the community to be a review team of those RFPs and make a recommendation to WDIC and then to budget on which of those RFPs to fund. There was such wide range of dollar amounts attached to the RFPs. It was very intriguing. So I just wanted to share that. I want to, on record, really just thank Jackie Kippler, our contracts manager, for helping me or WDIC with this, because I am certainly like a fish out of water when it comes to figuring out what to do about the contracts management piece of it. And she has graciously agreed to help with that. So that committee should be meeting so we can keep within our timeline sometime between now and the end of next week. They've already met, might have, to review those and come up with a decision, because we would like very much to, within the first week of June, award a bid. It all depends on which of those proposals get chosen, because, like I said, they really range from, you know, low thousands to very high thousands to tens of thousands, which is very interesting. So we're looking for that, and it's information that you as a full body will also receive so that you can take a look for yourselves. That's where we are.
Thank you. Questions for Leslie? Okay, let's go to Peter Stein, Chair's Health and Human Services Committee.
Yes, I believe we had a resolution pulled.
Resolution C.
And I'd like to move Resolution 4838.
Is there a second? That's the Family Assessment Response Public-Private Partnership Grant. Seconded by Kathy.
Yes, I'm not sure why it was pulled, so...
Carol, did you pull it?
Yeah, well, I pulled it just because I wanted to know some more information about exactly what it is. The explanation, I mean, in general, when we get explanations that say, you know, we got a chance to get a grant, and so that's why we have a resolution, as opposed to describing what the program is.
It was described earlier at our last meeting. This is a grant, a large grant, that's given by some California not-for-profit organization having to do with the way that family courts operate. And they have a system that they think will make family court better. And so we're taking part in that. And it's a group in California. And so actually Patricia Carey was in California recently working with that group. And this is simply a resolution to accept the money that they've given us, which is $101,031, and spending it, which is a grant for $101,031.
Yeah, no, you answered my question. Thank you. It's to improve the family courts. So, yes, I support this. Thanks.
I'm glad it was pulled for the sense that to accept a $101,000 grant is no small change, and I think it's a pretty nice thing that we're getting for the county.
Yep.
Ready to vote on this, folks? All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous.
Okay, so I'm going to try to make the rest of my comments, I want to tell you what happened at the last at the last meeting of HSS. So we heard from a lot of people. We heard from Amy from Amy Hendricks, who heads our youth program, and we heard sort of a dismal presentation. The recreation program that has been worked with by our youth committee is going downhill. A couple of years ago, we substantially reduced the
funding. The funding's going
funding
downhill
for that, and the funding. The idea was that the municipalities would step up and provide more funding for it themselves, but they too are caught in the tax cap vice, and rather than spending more money, they are spending less money. A couple of them have gotten together to try to work together instead of individually. Maybe that'll help, but one of them is the town of Ithaca, which I understand they're cutting all of their youth funding next year. They're cutting it in half this year or something like that. So it was pretty dismal, and it's not clear to me that what we can do about that. But Amy is going to do her best to make a plan for what it is that we can do and do well with the resources that we have available. Next thing we talked about was that there was some bad news in terms of money, that we learned that a certain amount of money that we were supposed to get from Medicaid has been reduced by $92,000. There'll be a $92,000 shortfall in that particular, the amount of money that we get. We heard a lengthy discussion from Dwight Mengel about something that I hadn't raised myself at the last meeting, so I won't repeat myself. But this has to do with this funny linking of Medicaid funds with public transportation in small counties, and the fact that the New York State has now taken that Medicaid money for itself and spent that money by putting it in some central organization in Syracuse, which does all of the assigning of Medicaid funds for allowing Medicaid recipients to go to their medical appointments and do that themselves. And instead of doing it on buses, they do it on taxis. And essentially what's happened is that it has destroyed or is in the course of destroying the bus services in many small counties. And there is a resolution that Dwight Mengel is helping us to do where we ask which we are working on, HHS is working on, I expect to have it after our next meeting, where there is a bill going on in the state Senate at the moment which would allow counties to opt out of this service of scheduling done by New York and go back to their own way where they could take the money and fund not only that but their bus services with it, and we're going to support that. Let me see, where am I? Mental health. This was kind of interesting. Dr. Romanchek reported on some feature of the SAFE Act. You've all heard of the SAFE Act, I guess, right? And it was a procedure in the SAFE Act whereby mental health practitioners were required to report all of their patients that they thought had some possibility of being dangerous to themselves or to somebody else. And all of these reporting goes directly to Dr. Romanchek, who looks at them and decides which of those reports are people who should be deprived of their right to carry firearms. And she looked at 95 reports in the past 3 months of people that were put on the list, and she found only 2 to 3 of those who it seemed wise to take away their privilege to own firearms. So thought you might be interested in that. Well, this is pretty interesting. I got to take a moment to explain to describe this. My wife and I, 2 weeks ago, went and saw a play in New York City called All the Way, which was one of the most fascinating things I've seen in a long time. It was a three-hour play that described 9 months in the history of the United States, from when Kennedy was assassinated till when Lyndon Johnson ran for re-election, and the politics of those 9 months. And I don't know, those of you who saw the movie about Lincoln and how the 13th Amendment was passed, this thing was as gripping, if not more so. And Lyndon Johnson found himself in this terrible box between being a Southern senator in league with a bunch of racist senators in the Senate, determined to pass the human rights law, and determined over their dead bodies to pass that human rights law. Absolutely fascinating, huh?
Civil rights.
I'm sorry, the civil rights law. An absolutely fascinating play. There he is talking to Martin Luther King, talking to SNCC, talking to J. Edgar Hoover, talking to Hubert Humphrey. I recommend anybody who can going to see that. Right, yeah. So that fit into the fact that we had a report from Tompkins Community Action, which I didn't realize was the result of Lyndon Johnson and the whole war on poverty, that's where it started. And I want to tell you that on September they're doing a poverty trip that will mimic a poverty trip that was taken during that period of time. And it's going to stop in Tompkins County on September 18th and 19th just to talk about the same things that were talked about during that poverty trip that took place in that period of time, that, I don't know, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, something like that. What are they doing there? They reported on some things they were trying to do to get some additional housing. Tompkins Community Action owns a house, and they are trying to turn that into a house where young people who are essentially homeless can live in that house with their children, their babies, and so on and so forth. Another thing they're doing is they're trying to make sure that foster parents that are taking care of kids who are eligible for Head Start actually get those people into Head Start, those children into Head Start. And so they're working on that project, and I guess that's all I have to say about that. We are going to get a resolution. The HHS is going to get a resolution to consider about banning tobacco sales in pharmacies, and that will come to us next month, and then I expect it to come to you the month after that. And that concludes my report. And our next meeting is on June 10th.
Questions? Will?
Peter, one other thing on community action. Maybe you mentioned, I didn't hear it. They've scheduled the grand opening of Magnolia
House.
Yes,
right. I should have.
Which is for Friday the 6th. I don't know the time. This is the somewhat aesthetically challenged, but I think very much needed facility that will be provide needed housing for women and coming out of substance abuse situations. So
I heard one interesting thing that I thought was sort of curious is that they're looking for some housing for people who have alcohol who are addicted to alcohol, and this is housing to help them, but these are people who not necessarily have agreed to stop drinking.
So it's a wet shelter.
And the idea is that They said it has been shown that people who get housing, and even though they are not committed to stopping drinking, that does tend to reduce and sometimes even stop their drinking. So that's what's behind that.
Peter, I wondered in the discussion about tobacco, and you mentioned about the sales in pharmacies, will your committee be looking at the issue of e-cigarettes?
I don't remember. I don't think that's come up.
Yes, it has, actually.
Has it?
Yes. So Frank Grippa was looking at, the Board of Health mentioned that they had expressed concern that there needed to be a policy on that, or at least...
Right, but don't we need the state to do that? Can we do it by ourselves?
We have a local smoking in public places policy, and so that is yet to come.
Thank you. Can we move on? Kathy Lou Serrera chairs Facilities and Infrastructure Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We met on Monday, May 19th, and I'm going to be brief because I know it's late, but I want to tell you about some interesting things. As Mike mentioned before, we had advised by the county administrator that there's interest in discussing the Commissioner of Public Works and doing something differently with that, and he reported to us that that Charter Review is going to be looking at it. Let's see. At the next meeting, we are going to get a look at the draft capital program. And I want anybody who was there at the meeting to correct me on this, because I wrote my notes really little. But what's important about the capital program, as you all know, it's infrastructure. And throughout Tompkins County, we've got a lot of bridges and roads that really need attention. So that's going to be of interest, and I'm going to invite everybody to the meeting. Some other brief things we talked about. The main courthouse basement renovation work is on target for early July completion. The HSB, the health building project, HSB.
Human Service Building.
Yes, Human Service Buildings. We're going to look at bids for... I have dollar signs. We're going to look at bids. How's that? Soon. And mental health. Somebody else mentioned there's a need. Oh, no, this is for safety. We're going to have a centralized reception area. And so we're doing some moves on that, and we'll keep you all advised. In addition, we talked about the Game Farm Road Bridge project. And we had a look, visual aid here, this nifty map with the proposed highway project list for 2014. You will note there are bridges and roads, but this has a lot of bridges on it that you can see really good all over Tompkins County that we need to be working on, you know, well, except in the city, but the city issues. And I'm not going to talk about those. What's interesting about it for me is that we try to prioritize them as well as we can. But as y'all know, we've had a lot of flooding and other things that happen. And sometimes a bridge will be undergoing some problems that we have to get in and go after. But what we've got here are ones that have gone through the process. And we've tried to figure out when we can do them, having to do with the materials and the maintenance schedule. So for whatever that's worth, we're going to be talking about that some more.
Kathy, I wondered if we might make copies available for all legislators.
I'll get you some better copies than this, which has been in my car for a few days and is kind of wrinkled.
Thank you.
I bet there's some more comments. The last I can tell you is that our next meeting is June 16th. I'm told that at the end of the meeting we had a rigorous discussion about goals, and we don't have any. But it is, after all, June, and I think we're doing pretty well on keeping up with facilities and infrastructure. But I would urge and welcome anyone to come to our next meeting, June 16th, 10:30. Right here in the legislature chambers. But does anybody else have comments or additions?
Questions?
Clarifications, Joe?
Did good.
Okay, we're late. What's that?
Thank you, Kathy.
Thank
Glad
you.
To have you back.
Thank you.
Economic Development Committee, Will Burbank, Chair.
Thank you, Mike. The committee has not met since our last meeting, but we will be meeting on June 2nd, which is a Monday, at 3:30 in the old jail. And that concludes my report, unless there are questions.
Questions for Will Burbank? Okay. Minutes of the previous meeting, May 6th. Someone want to move those? Moved by Peter Stein. Is there a second? Seconded by Brian Robinson. Discussion?
Yes, I said something that I think did not make it into the record, and I had asked that it be included. And I talked to Kathy this afternoon or morning. So this is about the budget, the vote on the fiscal on the financial goal. So in your packet page 31, Kathy, I'm not sure if this should go before the box or after that box. You know, it's where it shows the vote.
It'll go just before the box.
Just before the box. I would like to have inserted, following the vote, Ms. Robertson said she had not spoken earlier about her vote on the resolution to establish a financial goal and said she would like it to be clear for the record that she voted against the goal because she believes it is too high. And if that could be inserted.
I recall you saying that.
Okay.
Anyone have any objection? Dooley?
I don't have an objection. I think it's in the notes, isn't it? That wording?
I asked that it be in the record.
Yeah, right, and it should be in the minute. I agree with you, but I think exactly what you read is also in the notes.
I admit I didn't look at the notes. So.
Okay. Are we ready to vote on the minutes?
Yes.
Dooley?
I am paraphrased on page 10. This was a discussion, this was a vote on sheriff and county clerk salaries. And I ask that my concerns be summarized in the minutes. And I don't think they were captured correctly. So I'm going to suggest, this is on packet page 24, the paragraph after that follows resolution 2014-80. Ms. Kiefer commented, as you get down toward the end of that paragraph, three lines from the bottom, it says, but not increase more than a certain dollar amount. This is what I want to insert. Since a simple percentage increase on a high salary is a larger dollar amount than the same percentage increase on an average salary. That was the point I was trying to make. And so I asked it.
You asked for that at the minutes.
Any
objection? Ready to vote on the minutes? All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? One opposed. Two opposed?
Two opposed.
Jim, were you voting yes or no?
I'm voting no.
You're voting no. Two opposed?
Three opposed.
Was there a third? I'm sorry.
I am a very bad person.
Let's see the vote again, please, on the minutes.
I vote against minutes.
Let me see the people who are opposed. One, two, three.
Four.
Dooley, are you opposed?
Yeah, I was one of the three.
No.
Now
I've got three others.
Congratulations.
Those opposed to passing these minutes, Jim, Mike, Dooley, Carol, four opposed. They pass. Any unfinished business? All right, we need a motion to go into executive session to discuss real estate negotiations. We will come out of executive session. We don't expect to take action at that point. Jim is moving it. Is there a second? Second by Mike. Did you have your hand up? All right. Those in favor? Those opposed? All right, we'll shut down the mics and we'll be in executive session.